Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, Steven. This is Brenda, a.k.a. Brenosaur, a.k.a. Herrerasaurus, and I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener, and wow, what a great day today has been. I woke up to a Facebook notification that my friend had tagged me in an article about the return of our beloved three, and so I then immediately went over to our Sea Jurassic Bright group, just to really confirm that it was true. And yes, it all was. I saw that you and Brenna actually got to go and be at the event where Colin made the big announcement. And I think that's so cool. And I'm so happy that y'all were able to make it after all. Can't even imagine the emotions that were going on there. Yeah, I just can't believe that this is actually happening, and I'm beyond excited that my Jurassic dream is actually going to come true. And I wanted to say hi to everyone in the Facebook group, and it's been really fun reading everyone's reactions. And I guess life really does find a way. Y'all take care.
Welcome to Sea Jurassic Right, the mini-sode, quote-unquote. Hey, it's Stephen Ray Morris. I'm back. I've missed you. It's been another spotty... This year, 2019, I almost said 2020. That's a question for the end of the episode. This year's been insane, but I love you all, and I'm still very sore from the Jurassic World 10K. I appreciate people's comments and support. I can't... When I signed up for that, it seems so far away, and then the day came, and it's like, you're going to wake up at 4 in the morning and go run up and down the hills at Universal. I'll talk about it a little bit more later, but it was super fun, and I'm so glad I did it, and I really want to do it again next year. Maybe I'll train this time. How's everyone doing? October was such a big month. I honestly think I needed November to catch up with everything. So I appreciate all of your patience. This is going to be a good episode. We actually have a lot of news. I mean, it's old news by the time this comes out, but I haven't really gotten a chance to talk about it at all, other than just kind of reposting things and stuff. And, you know, in between episodes, that's what's been really keeping me alive is, oh, that's another hit for later, is just getting to share on social and seeing all of your reactions and stuff like that. A few announcements up top. I was a guest on the Dark Weeb podcast, which is, if you don't know that podcast, it's comedian Brody Reed and podcast king, now turning into writing king, Cody Ziegler. He does the podcast Scam Goddess, Yo, Is This Racist? And now he is actually leaving it all to go write on She-Hulk. And also he wrote on Craig of the Creek, which is a great show. I'm super excited for him. And about a couple weeks ago, I was a guest and we talked mostly Jurassic Park toys and stuff. And it was such a blast. And Battle at Big Rock. Both Brody and Cody. Oh, their names are on. I never thought about that. They're both two big sweethearts. And it was such a blast to talk Jurassic with them. So go check that out. Obviously, I hope everyone had a great... I'm saying I hope everyone had a great Halloween. It's November 21st. But as we transition from Halloween to Thanksgiving for us Yankees, us American blokes, to Christmas, honestly, I didn't feel like I got to celebrate Halloween like during the month of October. So I feel like I've been keeping the dream alive into November. I hope you enjoyed the episodes with Luce Tomlin Brenner and also, Chris Bramante, aka Montioc, and, you know, Brenna White, aka Bonnie Puns, aka Beeksles, was in both episodes too. It was so much fun to get to, just kind of do kind of fun, casual, you know, chat stuff, scariest moments, all that, everything like that. Yeah, let me know if you want more stuff like that. We talked Carnosaur 2, and then we also talked scariest Jurassic Park moments. That was really fun. Later in this episode, we're going to get to your responses about that, because it's actually funny because Clayton Fioriti just did a video about why there should be a Jurassic Park survival horror game. And I've been watching on his channel him play these like really cool sort of survival horror demos that somebody's made for Jurassic Park. So I still think it's relevant. Jurassic Park is always going to be scary, or parts of it anyway. So, I actually am going to, I'm going to read the comments that you guys said what your scariest moments were for Jurassic Park later in this episode. But yeah, those two episodes are really fun. Carnosaur 2. It's funny because I bought it off Amazon, as I mentioned in the episode, and the thing keeps popping up. Like, are you satisfied with your purchase? And I just want to be like, listen to this podcast, which would be interesting. So a couple other announcements. Last year I did a gift exchange, which was super fun. Let me know if you want to do that again. I forget the website, Elfster, I think I did it on. Let me know if you want to have a gift exchange again. And if you live in Los Angeles, I think, because I've been slacking at the latter part of this year, two things. I think we should do Jurassic January, which will be a celebration of Jurassic World, because Jurassic World is going to celebrate its 5th year anniversary in 2020. Also, if you're paying attention, Jurassic World isn't a Christmas movie, but it's certainly a post Christmas, New Year's, still on Christmas break kind of movie. So I think we should do Jurassic January. I think that should that be a thing? I think that should be a thing. Should it be a thing? I think that should be a thing. And as a way, because Jurassic World 3 is going to start filming in February. Isn't that insane? I can't believe we're already here. So, oh, and also, I did a Jurassic Park trivia night back, way back when Fallen Kingdom came out. So many amazing people. Obviously, Brenna was there, and Maddie, and Faith, and all the Jurassics, you know, and I can't even... I mean, there's just so many. I mean, Ash and Chris Bramante celebrated that night. Just so many wonderful people. It was one of the best nights of 2018, hands down. And I'm going to be doing something similar to that in January. So stay tuned. I'm just going to sneak peek it now. But let's get into this news. Obviously, because I talked about how Jurassic World 3 is filming in February. So we got a lot of news. I printed out paper. That's how serious I am. Couple of quick things. Jurassic World Alive is now, Jurassic World Alive? Live Tour? Oh, Jurassic World Live Tour. I called it Jurassic World Alive. Again, another hint for something later in this episode. Jurassic World the Live Tour is happening, and apparently they are coming to California, next year. So I'm definitely going to try going to that. I'm going to try to go to that because it looks really fun. And I think as far as talking about, you know, this sort of ancillary tie-in media, everything like that, we don't have a lot. We don't have a lot, you guys. So I've heard that the Jurassic World Live Tour really is a really cool edition. And there's actually going to be an article from Tom Jurassic that I am going to shout out later in this episode that talks about that a little bit as well. But have you gone and seen the live tour? Let me know how it is. The merch looks great. Over at Tim over at Collect Jurassic was showing some off, and it looks really sweet. Speaking of other new stuff, I really got to play Jurassic World Evolution. They're just releasing this DLC over the last couple days called... Or I don't think it's out yet. No, it comes out December 6th or 5th, I believe. Oh, coming December 5th. December 10th. It's from... I got this link from Tom, and it's... the UK dates, you know, it goes day, month, and then year. But that comes out in December, and it's called Return to Jurassic Park, where they're basically reskinning all of Jurassic World Evolution to look like Jurassic Park, and having Dr. Ellie Sattler, Dr. Alan Grant, and Dr. Ian Malcolm come back as well. And I don't know if it's been confirmed. It didn't seem like it confirmed that that our faves would be doing the voices, but maybe they are, because Jeff Goldblum did the voice in Jurassic World Evolution, so maybe all three are coming back. So let's just dive into the Jurassic World 3 news. Tons of new casting news, which has gotten me really excited. But I wanted to approach, you know, just trying to wrap up all this news into one bite-sized kind of thing. The big questions, I think, going into Jurassic World 3, as we go into 2020, the big questions I'm so curious about. What does Dr. Ellie Sattler's major role mean? Obviously, I covered it in the last mini about Laura Dern returning in a major role, not a cameo, as their words, as Colin Trevorrow's words were. Oh, I totally forgot I met Colin Trevorrow last month. Wow. Look, sometimes you got to stop and smell the big pile of shit. No, sometimes you got to stop and smell the roses, you guys. And that's just hitting me now that that happened. I was like, oh my gosh, I met Colin Trevorrow. That's so cool. Didn't get to meet Laura Dern. Maybe one day. Although, this is just another new news that I just remembered right now. I look like Laura Dern, Maria Wojciechowski. I interviewed on back in season one. I interviewed her about her Instagram about, you know, recreating Laura Dern moments. And she actually got to meet Laura Dern, which I think is really cool. I haven't talked to her about it yet, but it looks like it was amazing and the best. So the big questions I think about as we're going into 2020, what are these big things that I'm thinking about? And what a lot of the news today, I think, over the last month has been, which is, what does Dr. Sattler's major role mean? With such a huge cast, what kind of movie is it? Globetrotting adventure, maybe. And I also think, what is the legacy of Jurassic Park? We're getting the return of Dr. Sattler, Dr. Grant, Dr. Malcolm, and with another interview where Emily and Colin talk about Jurassic World 3 as Jurassic Park 6, I think that there's going to be some sort of... I think Fallen Kingdom really was about the legacy of Hammond, but I wonder what the legacy of Jurassic Park is, and I wonder how that's going to come into play with so many returning cast members from the original. So some of the news... a lot of this news today is coming from Jurassic Park Podcast, coming from Forbes, Jurassic Outpost, Variety, Deadline, and this Malta website, which I didn't list in my list. Where is it? Newsmalta.com. Okay. So, that's one thing that's really interesting, is that Jurassic World 3 is possibly going to be filming in Malta, or, you know, if we're not going back to Hawaii, you know, where we know we're going to be filming at Pinewood Studios, which they filmed Fallen Kingdom at for all the set stuff. So what other on location stuff are we going to film? And Malta, if people don't know, is a very, it's Mediterranean. So, and it's like beach, beautiful. You don't see me, but in the studio, I'm like, bobbing and weaving. I don't know. I don't really know what that means, but I, again, Globetrotting Adventure, maybe. And so I went to look into this. So the previously announced cast before September was Bryce Dallas Howard. That was and Chris Pratt. That was confirmed in Entertainment Weekly in February of 2018. And everyone's listed BD Wong, Isabella Sermon, and then I also included Blue and Rexy. Those four are confirmed, but I haven't seen any official sources. That's just been kind of a given that BD Wong and Isabella Sermon are returning, which obviously, I think that is a no-brainer, and Blue and Rexy. Oh, that'd be so weird if Rexy didn't show up in Fallen Kingdom. I mean, that could be interesting. They could, like, spin that off into Rexy going on her own adventure that doesn't have anything to do with the main cast. But I almost think that Rexy isn't going to be part of the main plot of Jurassic World 3, I think. That's just my own feeling. But we're going to get a scene with Rexy in it, because kind of like a send-off. But I don't think she's going to play a huge role in Jurassic World 3. Mark my words. I'm very thankful that people are saying that Isabella Sermon is going to be back, because I would, you know, there was that kerfuffle about the time jump and stuff that Chris Pratt was saying, or the state of the world. But I think that was just kind of I think that was taken, blown out of proportion. I think it's just talking about, I think they're going to move things along in the 3 years between Fallen Kingdom and Jurassic World 3. I don't think we're going to jump like 10 years in the future. But if they did, that would mean that they obviously wouldn't use Isabella Sermon, because she's still a little girl. But Well, she's a teenager, I guess, now. But yeah, I really like Isabel Sermon's performance as Macy. I think she's one of the best things, if not the best thing, about Fallen Kingdom. So I would really hate for them to age her out for some reason. I don't know. It'd have to be a really good reason. But since September, we've gotten Laura Dern, obviously, major role, not a cameo, Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum. And then in October, we got two new casting. And I apologize if I mispronounce the names. Sorry. This is the first time I'm actually trying to say these names out loud. I was like, I thought I tried this already. Mamoudou Athey, and he was actually in The Get Down with Justice Smith, and in the article they listed him as lead role. And then DeWanda Wise, also a newcomer from She's Gotta Have It, she's also listed as a leading role. And I thought it was really interesting because on Twitter, Colin said, can't wait to work with Mamoudou Athey, amazing actor. And then Colin said on DeWanda Wise, hero. And then actually Neems, you know him from Nima Neems, you know him from all the amazing posters he does, the movie poster guy. Neems asked if Wise was playing Kelly grown up or not, which Vanessa Lee Chester is still out there, still working, still kicking, doing amazing things, being hilarious, being amazing. She's the best. So I appreciate that Colin answered saying this is a brand new character quote on Twitter to really just stop those rumors now. Because, yeah, that would be a shame if it was like an Independence Day. Oh, my gosh, I can't remember the actor's name. When she didn't get to Mae Whitman. Yeah. When she didn't get to come back and play her character grown up in Independence Day, which was a real shame. So I appreciate Colin stepping ahead of that and being like, hey, DeWanda Wise, brand new character, hero. And then via Collider, I have to give props to these people writing the articles. Nope. I went too many pages. There we go. All right. So. Amanda Nduka was on Deadline about Mamoudou Athey, and then Justin Kroll, Nick Kroll's brother, over Variety reported on DeWanda Wise. And then Jeff Schneider over at Collider, his name rhymes, reported that Daniela Pineda and Justice Smith are returning for Jurassic World 3, which in all this new casting news, and especially with the returning main cast, I was growing increasingly concerned that Daniela Pineda and Justice Smith would not be returning as Zia and Franklin. Because even though they have, I mean, they're side characters in Fallen Kingdom, but with kind of, again, these concerns about the legacy of Jurassic Park and our big heroes coming back from that movie, I just was like, is there room for Zia and Franklin, or are we going to spin them off into their own adventures? And in an interview in Empire with Colin, he says, the next film allows the legacy characters to be part of the story in an organic way. Emily Carmichael and I call it Jurassic Park 6 because it is. And soon we'll see where they all ended up 20 years later. You start asking the most basic questions. Who are these people now? What do they make of the new world they're living in? And how do they feel being part of its history? Teases Trevorrow. Ultimately, it will be a collaboration with the actors. They know and love these characters. We'll do it together. And in an interview with Forbes, Frank Marshall was interviewed, producer. And he says, why the franchise remains beloved and has grown in popularity is, according to the mega producer, very simple. Marshall explained, it's about the dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are timeless, and they were here. We're not dealing with superheroes. We're not dealing with science fiction. We're dealing with science fact. We are in full production at Pinewood Studios in London. We plan on shooting in February of next year, 2020. So that is all very much in motion, he updated. So, again, I think when you bring all this news together, I mean, like the cast. Okay, how many people we got here? We got making room. We got Bryce Ellis Howard. We got Chris Pratt. We got BD Wong. We got Isabel Sermon. We got Blue. We got Rexy. We got Laura Dern. We got Sam Neill. We got Jeff Goldblum. We got Mahmoud Al-Athi. We got DeWanda Wise. We got Daniela Pineda, and we got Justice Smith. We don't even have the Fellowship. We have the Company of Dwarves over here, from The Hobbit. I would love to see Martin Freeman in a Jurassic Park movie. Anyway, so that is a stacked cast. That might be the biggest cast, the biggest, like, named cast. I mean, Jurassic World seemed like it had a really big cast, but I mean, if you think about, you know, I love Judy Greer, but I mean, she's in it for very little. Here are my thoughts on this. I keep thinking that it's going to be a globe trotting adventure. Dinosaurs, obviously where we left off in Fallen Kingdom, you know, everyone's kind of spreading out from, Lockwood's Manor in California, Northern California. We have the incident at Battle of Big Rock, which is only a couple miles away. So it doesn't seem, as far as, you know, leaving off at battle, and then obviously the promo clip or the clips at the end, the sort of viral clips of the dinosaurs and stuff at the end of Battle of Big Rock show dinosaurs are spreading. But there's still going to be a big leap between the end of Fallen Kingdom / Battle of Big Rock into Jurassic World 3. But if you think about the state of things between Jurassic World and Fallen Kingdom, obviously, the leap is going to be much bigger, but I think that there was such a leap. I mean, you leave Claire, she's like, hey, what do we do? You know, we stick together for survival. Boom, 3 years later, you know, Claire and Owen are broken up. There's the volcano that's suddenly active. Claire's part of the DPG. Wu has apparently made an entirely new dinosaur, the Indoraptor that's grown and developed. So a lot had developed between those two movies. But I think the jump is going to be even bigger here, even though the time span is a little bit smaller, or time span is the same, actually. But I mean, you see the Mosasaur free, you see the Allosaurus being taken away at the end, the Allosaurus and the Baryonyx being taken away by different companies. You see the briefcase of DNA being put away somewhere, you know, Wu's packing up and gets dragged out. So what I'm getting at is I whispered a few times, we're going to be on a globetrotting adventure. I think it's going to be James Bond style. And I even think that because I think this is going to allow for a lot of our legacy characters to return, because I think the problem always has been, how do you get someone to an island? How do you get someone to an island? How do you get someone to this new park? But I really do think that this is a problem that you can't ignore. And again, as Colin has said in past interviews, like way, way, way ago, right after Fallen Kingdom came out, you know, how do dinosaurs and us coexist? You know, we're not on an island. We're not in this little, like, kind of bubble. Like, I truly do think when we open up Jurassic World 3, like, dinosaurs are just going to be, they're not going to, like, it's not going to be Dinotopia, but I think it's going to be that thing like Battle of Big Rock, like, you hear rumors in school and you have, and as Colin and Emily have mentioned, Battle of Big Rock is one of the first serious encounters, which I think takes place like a year after Fallen Kingdom. So again, I don't know. It's really hard to think about. And I actually say, because I did that little time capsule thing a few months ago about what our predictions are for Jurassic World 3. But I feel like, especially with Dr. Sattler, you know, with Laura Dern having a major role, to me, that really kind of threw out a lot of ideas that I had about maybe what Jurassic World 3 would. I still think Macy and Blue are going to be important, but I think there's going to be a reason why we need Dr. Sattler. I think there's going to be something that relates to her that kind of ties everything together. Because I think if you have a cameo, if you have like Jeff Goldblum's cameo in Fallen Kingdom, it's not really dependent on him as a character. It's more of like a nod to the book, the idea of the expert witness that, in Michael Crichton's original Jurassic Park, Grant was like called as an expert witness in these like environmental and, climate change stuff. So I think that was kind of more of a nod to that. And it isn't really dependent on him as a character. Whereas I feel like to involve Laura Dern in the way that they're talking about, I think that there's going to be something fundamental that kind of happens to her. Maybe Charlie gets eaten. No, I don't know. I certainly don't want her motivations to be based on children, like her kid being eaten or Mark Degler getting eaten or whatever. Look, do I want it to happen so that she can get with Dr. Grant? Sure. But I don't want her motivations to be based on those things. I mean, she's Dr. Ellie Sattler. When we last left off with her in Jurassic Park 3, she was writing a book. She's getting that great poll quote. I think she was always the most present person in the original movie. And I think that there's going to be something that is happening to her. And that's why has a major role. That's why she's part of the movie and not just kind of set dressing Malcolm is more of like the narrator or the bookend, you know? So I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, we're going to start finding out stuff sooner or later, especially as we go into 2020. So that's kind of all my food for thought on that. And I mean, there's just so much amazing news. Are you excited for the casting? I'm really excited. I'm so glad we're going to have this really cool, diverse cast. I haven't seen anything that Mamoudou Athi and DaWanda Wise have been, but I think I just am so stoked for a big cast. I think the great thing about Jurassic Park was that everybody was important. And I think since Lost World, I think Jurassic Park 3 and Fallen Kingdom have really used their cast really well. I feel like Jurassic World and The Lost World, I think their casts kind of got away with themselves. And I feel like people were, I don't know if wasted is the right word, but I feel like, you know, Jurassic Park, you remember every character, you know, there was no small parts in that sense, you know, and I hope that that's the case with Jurassic World 3. I'm hoping that even if all these characters aren't together, like in my mind, if this is a globetrotting adventure, that there would be teams of people reporting from the field, like to Claire, like she's the one who's kind of heading up this new iteration of the DPG that's kind of dealing with these dino problems, these dino threats, as Tom has said a few times. Love you, Tom. Like, that's for me. Like, I think if you have, because I would be fine if Daniela and Justice were in it, like the same way Lex and Tim were in The Lost World. Like, I'm fine with them having a small role in the beginning or something like that. But almost like the idea, the hint, the sort of Star Wars Marvel idea of like, okay, we check in with Zia and Franklin, and they're off doing stuff for Claire. They're off kind of on their own mission. And so maybe they're going on their own White Castle. And, you know, that's the sort of thing where it's like, yeah, we don't necessarily need to see the fruits of their labor per se, but to know that they're out there doing stuff would be really cool. Or again, just playing sort of a supplementary role to the larger story. But I just don't think the story is obvious. I don't think, because even Fallen Kingdom, the story wasn't really about them, but they were there for the ride. So, but I think that's the way you get people involved in the adventure. I think that's how you get a Sarah Harding cameo with Julianne Moore. I think that's how you get Jake Johnson to come back for a minute too. I think that's how you cut to Enid, Oklahoma, and you got freaking, Taya Leone and William H. Macy, and Trevor Morgan back, you know? Oh no, I hope Eric Kirby isn't still at home working for Kirby's Paint Tile Plus. I hope he's moved far away and done something with his life because he deserves it. After surviving 8 weeks on Isla Sorna? Okay. So there's so much to chew on, which I also want to point you to. Speaking of Tom Jurassic, I'm not going to go into all the details because Jurassic World Tour isn't coming towards me anytime soon. So I haven't really been paying attention to it that much. But Colin Trevorrow it's a little bit of a controversy, this idea of canon, soft canon. And I think in the day and age of Marvel and Star Wars, you want everything to count. And with Jurassic Park, we have so little. We have so little. We have one book. We have Jurassic World Live Tour, and even that's called into question. Jurassic World Level, you know, we don't have much to go on, but we want this larger universe. And so Colin Trevorrow recently made some statements about maybe the Jurassic World Live Tour not counting as much as kind of original statements were. And anyway, this is just an excuse to go read Tom's writing. He's great. It's over at Jurassic Outpost. Jurassic Outworld and Soft Canon, a counteractive and convoluted conundrum. I love that wordplay. So I'm going to put a link to that. And also, speaking of other great community articles, man, I love our community so much. Victoria over at Victoria's Cantina, and the stupid stuff with COPPA and YouTube and stuff. Go support Victoria. She does amazing work. And so she might be not, she's probably not going to be doing toy reviews anymore because of all this stupid stuff. So, but she's done amazing work in the podcast she does with Tim, Collect Jurassic World. Go support her that way. She's got some merch and stuff. Go support her. But she did a really great article last month about all the QC issues plaguing Mattel. And it's that thing of like the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, like the Jurassic toys have been so great from Mattel, but the sort of in-between movie years, you know, there's a couple of misplaced eyeballs. And so I think there's something to talk about there. And it's really interesting. So I'll put a link over to Victoria's article to read, because it's really good and you should go support everything she does. And I'm going to actually just bring this up now. I'm like looking at my notes. I'm like, I should have done that first. So I want to just pause for a minute, and I'm going to insert a part of an interview. Well, this is the complete part of the interview. Anyway, on the Purrcast, which is the podcast I do with Sarah Iyer, where we talk about cats, we've been doing over 200 episodes. And recently we did an interview with Nathan the Cat Lady. He's a really cool cat advocate, and his cats are super sweet, and he's got awesome cat style for his apartment. Really, like, if you're somebody who has pets and wants to make your apartment for your pets, you know, for your cat specifically, he's somebody, he knows how to do it right. See, cat right. but Nathan is also an actor, very talented actor. And he, I was watching the Jurassic World, because Brenna had the Fallen Kingdom, like, DVD or Blu-ray or something. We were watching it, and I saw a commercial for the Jurassic World Alive app, which is the sort of Pokemon Go, but with dinosaurs. I was playing it a lot a while ago, but then it got too hot, so I stopped walking to work, and then I didn't play it that much. But Nathan the Cat Lady, he is actually stars in the Jurassic World Alive commercial. And so I asked him a few questions about it. While I was doing double duty, I was doing the Purrcast and See Jurassic Ride at the same time. So, I nabbed that bit of interview and I saved it for here. So take a listen right now. And then when we come back, I'll get into what I've been up to Jurassic wise in the last month and a half. Let's go listen to Nathan's interview.
Wait, can I ask you briefly, because you were in a Jurassic World commercial.
I was, yeah.
For Jurassic World Alive. Sorry, I'm co-opting this podcast for a second. It's other, you know, animals and stuff,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
because there's a...
I'll allow it. You know I'll allow it.
Thank you, Sarah.
And I don't have... You don't need my permission is what I mean.
Okay, thank you. Well, also, it relates to, because when Sarah and I worked together briefly at a place, and it was the summer of Pokemon Go, where like in the office, I remember one time we were like, there's a Snorlax in the parking lot.
We all ran down to the parking lot. It was a great day.
That was like such a great summer for like being at
Princess is on. Is there another one?
There's a shelf. Cool. It's for like spices and stuff. She's the only cat that can get up there. So just leave it empty so she can jump up there. And
oh, that's cool.
I just see a tail sticking out of the corner.
That's the cutest thing.
Can I get my camera fast enough? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Actually, I have a video. She was up there one time trying to be cute, and I was doing a selfie one night, just being like, hey, princess, being cute. And she tried to roll to be cute and just completely fell off, hit the counter, fell. And I was speechless. What? How? I mean, she landed on her feet eventually.
Oh my gosh.
She hit a few things on the way down. Jurassic.
They have a Jurassic World Alive is the Jurassic Park version of the Pokemon Go app that Sarah and I had a lot of fun with. But yeah, you were in the commercial for it. Unfortunately, the dinosaurs aren't back here, so you weren't reacting to anything real.
I had a palm tree that they said the T-Rex will be about that big. Like that was an intense day for me, because I didn't know what I had booked. The original rate for it was decent, like lower end. And so, you know, they're like, you're going to this park, be there at 7 a.m. It's a mobile app for a commercial or a commercial for a mobile app. And I went, all right, you know, okay, day rate. It must be some, you know, small little app. And I get there and I was like, so what is this for? And they go, okay, so this is for Universal, for Jurassic World Alive. Mm-hmm. There's 10 producers from Universal coming over right now. And it was just this huge production. They blocked off the park and it. Wow. So the end of the day, they come up to me and they're like, okay, this is the last shot. You turn around and you see the T-Rex. They're like, we got 30 minutes of daylight left to get this. The producers are over watching you. I need you to go from terrified to shocked to awe, and you got about 3 seconds to hit all three looks. That's your eye line right there. See that tree? Okay. And we ready? And after, by this point, a crowd had formed around the set, and I was terrified. I was like, this is, what am I doing today?
And but see, it helped. It's like method acting.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I was terrified of the producer. Like, can you just put a producer right up there, and I'll just look them in the eyes the whole time? But it ended up working out really well, and they got the shots. It turned out to be a great spot, and ended up, it went from just being a little Facebook video to they're like, you know, we love this. Can we put this on TV? So they ended up paying more to put it on TV. Nice. And then they were like, yeah, you know what? Actually, we're going to put this on the DVD. So when you start the movie,
that's Nathan.
Yeah. And that was pretty crazy too. Cause they told me originally they were thinking maybe theater, movie theaters. And they were like, yeah, if we put it on the DVD or the theaters, we have to get everybody's approval. So we have to get the director and the producers. And so I like to think that Spielberg had to watch that and say, hey, this guy doesn't suck. Go for it. You know? So I somewhere along the line, I got his seal of approval, even if he will never remember or know, but.
Well, I mean, he is known that he does like watch everything. Wow. For stuff. Like he is, I think, unlike some producers who it's like, cool, I can make an easy buck if I slap my name on something. I feel like he's known for, or at least that's what he's kind of known for, is that, oh, Princess looks so cute. And, he's known for wanting to at least say that he's seen it, you know, instead
well,
of being like,
for that. Yeah,
you're like, oh, that was a great mobile app thing. He's like, what? You know, like,
we have a mobile app? What?
Yeah. So
that's just blacked out and approved a bunch of stuff.
I mean, I feel like some of those people are so busy approving things and watching stuff that I feel like, you wouldn't remember.
Not literally blacked out, but just like he was busy and. I mean, no disrespect to Mr. Spielberg.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. Spielberg. he's a big Percast fan.
Yeah. I wonder if
what
he,
if he is. Yeah.
I see.
I was in your Jurassic World Alive spot. Please notice me.
Jurassic World 3 is coming out in 2 years. Still plenty of time to cast Nathan. Uh-huh. And then it's
there's
like
Wild Cats. I can be that. There we go.
Well, I feel like Jurassic World, like any theme park, would probably have. You know, cats to help like the mice and everything, you know.
What about, because dinosaurs are out in the world now, and you still have Instagram influencers, so what if it was like Nathan the Dinosaur Lady, and it's like you got Instagram influencers for like dinosaur people?
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah,
sitting there rubbing a T-Rex's belly, making a funny video.
Yeah.
All right, we're doing the Macarena with these little arms. Come on, buddy. We got this.
I think that's probably, like, I could totally see them doing that because recently there was a new short film that they did where it is set like with dinosaurs like back in the world, and they basically took a bunch of like YouTube videos or like stock footage videos and put dinosaurs in them in like everyday situations.
Oh,
so I could totally see that way of like, yeah, making it feel in universe and, you know, and it's like you were in the Alive app commercial. So it's like, oh my God, the universe, it's like, it's all connected, you know, like
full circle is planned the whole time, guys. They're brilliant.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Nathan. It was like, hey, I know that guy. That's always the most fun. I wanted to give a couple of quick shout outs right now as we go into my adventures, because I've been doing a lot of fun stuff over the last month. Very busy, very stressed, but also very fun. So, you know, it all comes together. Over at My Favorite Weekend, which was the My Favorite Murder Festival cruise, but it was in Santa Barbara. Had a blast. And again, Murderinos are super sweet. And the fact that they think about me when they see Jurassic Park or dinosaur stuff means the world to me. And Natasha, who had recently gotten out of the Peace Corps, gave me a freaking fossil. I don't know from when or how old or anything like that, but who cares? It's a real fossil. I posted that on the See Jurassic Right Instagram, so go take a look at that. But again, I hope you've gotten some rest, Natasha. She was saying in her letter that she literally like got back from being in Morocco in the Peace Corps and then literally went to My Favorite Weekend before seeing her family. So, Natasha, you're so sweet. Thank you. I have a fossil, you guys. What the heck? And then my dearest, dearest friend, Roxy, who I met through this podcast, who lives in LA now, which is super awesome, but she's flying everywhere. So hopefully I get to see her soon. But, she gave me the sweetest gift, which was, it was her mom's, and it's a lot of things. It's so interesting though. So in 97, there is a Jurassic Park The Ride themed NASCAR train set. It's basically a couple of train cars, a couple of NASCARs cars. DuPont is the company, I think, the NASCAR, you know, main sponsor or whatever. And yeah, it's funny because when I search on eBay sometimes for Jurassic Park stuff, especially Jurassic Park 3 stuff, there's all this like NASCAR stuff that pops up sometimes, because I think there was some, I think kind of this collaboration or sort of thing, but it's such a quirky, interesting, I mean, it's a train set, but there's NASCAR. I don't know. There's just a lot going on, and it was very sweet of Roxy to give it to me. And, you know, I moved in February. I'm trying to get my place together. And I think one of my big plan is to have a wall, or I have these shelves where I want there to be a Jurassic Park, you know, Jurassic dinosaur themed space. I want there to be a true crime space. I want there to be a cat space. And so, you know, this is the kind of stuff that it's like, oh man, I want to display that stuff because it's so weird. It's so unique. It's so cool. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that Dino Nick, who's one of the coolest, was holding on to a legacy Spinosaurus. For those that don't know, the, Jurassic Park legacy Spinosaurus toy from Mattel just got the shaft from Target, I believe, or something with the supply thing. And anyway, like nobody was able to get them, and they go for crazy prices on eBay and stuff. But Dino Nick had a couple extra. And so over the Jurassic World Universal 10K run weekend, we finally met up because he ran the 5K, him and his fiance, Emily, who's the sweetest, who's cousins with Sarah McNulty, the squidologist from Ologies. Whoa, this world is so small. But it was just so funny, because we all, like, Brenna and I went with Nick and Emily, and we were like going into like the parking lot and like being like, oh yeah, you got a spine, you know, like opening your jacket like you're a drug dealer. Like it was such a surreal moment, but just made me so thankful for this community and that kind of stuff. Again, I want to do the gift exchange. I've made up my mind. I really want to do the gift exchange. But this time I will definitely mail my gift out on time. Oh, I'm the worst. But yeah, so that was just hilarious. So that I just wanted to point out those things, because those were the sweetest, you know. And it's, I have the battle damage Spinosaurus as well too, and I took it out of the box, and it's so fun. So yeah, the last month I had a couple really fun things that, I mean, again, a lot of you who are following along have participated in stuff, and that's been really nice. But just recapping it here, I feel like these SJR minisodes are almost like diaries or journals for me, where it's like, what did I do this month? But if somebody was to like go back in time, they'd be like, wow, he only did Jurassic Park things, which is true.
So it was really fun at the beginning of last month. My dad moved to Miami. So I'm going to go, I'm going to Salt Lake City and Miami for Christmas, which couldn't be two different places. I mean, they are two different places, but couldn't be more different places. And I think we're going to go to the Science Museum there, which looks really cool. Because I don't think they actually have a Natural History Museum. I think their Science Center and Natural History Museum are kind of combined. So I'm looking forward to that, but my dad wanted me to just kind of help organize the attic because a lot of it is my shit. So I just went through I ended up doing a live stream where I was digging through all the toys and stuff. And honestly, most of it was Star Wars. I was actually surprised at how much is missing. But I also think, because a lot of Jurassic Park stuff, like I kind of would take, you know, one at a time, like as I got back into the fandom. So I would go home and like grab a figure here or there, grab a dino. So I was surprised but I was kind of surprised at the lack of Jurassic Park stuff. Like, I don't know where my original Explorer is. Like, I have pieces of it, but I don't have the actual thing. And like, yeah, so I didn't have as much stuff. Like, my Alan Grant figure wasn't there. Only the hang gliding version of Ian Malcolm was there from The Lost World. So, yeah, I don't know. It was very surprising. But I ended up taking all my Jurassic Park stuff with me. I left the Star Wars stuff up there because it was just too much. It was like four boxes. Left, even though I've been getting back into even though I've been getting back into Lego, I left my old Lego at home. I live in a one bedroom, so it's just a little too much. But I have like the gates from the command center and stuff. And I actually grabbed the command center with me too, which was the cream of the crop. There's that picture of me from Christmas when I was six playing with the command center. So it's weird to have it just sitting in the corner in my apartment now. I'm like, that thing was around when I was six. That thing's over 25 years old. It's wild. So I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I definitely want to take all those Jurassic Park toys and figure out something to do with them, setting them up, or maybe I'll give them to Luna. I don't know. Brenna's daughter. But yeah, that was fun. And then, yeah, just quickly to go through, Sarah and I did a Percast live show in Seattle at See Meow Con, which was such a great festival. Great Cat Con over up in Seattle. I really hope they do it next year because I love Seattle. I didn't realize how much I love Seattle. I hung out with Colby and Alex again. Colby is a dear friend of mine, and every time I go to Seattle, I always try and see her and her husband, Alex, who's awesome. And we just kind of palled around a little bit over the weekend. Did the Space Needle, and then I went to the Burke Museum, which I've talked about before on the podcast, because I went with Colby and Alex the first time. They, right after I went the first time, they shut it down for a few years to remodel it completely. And now it's this. So I recently went to that Salt Lake Natural History Museum, which is a beautiful, gorgeous, modern structure. Because natural history museums, you have two different kind of modes. You have either like modern architecture, postmodern, like glass and steel and concrete and wood. And then you have like, oh, we're an old museum from the past, and oh, we got so many stuffed animals and taxidermy. I think of the Dublin Museum, and I think of the Natural History Museum in London. Well, you know, actually, London's like a hybrid, but even the Los Angeles, the Natural History Museum here in Los Angeles is, you know, it kind of has those kind of historic Natural History Museum turn of the century vibes. Whereas the one in Salt Lake City, which Brenna took me to, and now the updated Burke, it's just modern. It's really cool. And it's organized like kind of, you know, dinosaurs on top. And then you're kind of like, you know, you kind of make your way back in time, which I thought was really cool. And I got to go with Renee, who, the first time we met was for when we did the Chicago Field Museum meetup and stuff. And I got to hang out with her and her sister and her mom and her dad. And it was like, I don't know, it was just really cute and fun. And I'm glad that she wanted to include me in on her family adventures. But we got to hang out and got to go check out all the new dinosaur displays and stuff. It's small. It's not huge because it's on the campus there for the university there. But I just think it's like, I don't know, natural history museums for me just have such a calming energy of kind of seeing the past and kind of having that deep time kind of perspective. And I thought that they, with having it be kind of this more narrow, it's almost like you're traveling through the strata, like the layers of the planet, you know, the different ages and stuff. The different ages, different eras, eons. Correct me in the comments. But yeah, that was such a blast. And then my favorite weekend was in Santa Barbara. I got to go back to my old stomping grounds where I went to school, because I went to UCSB. I'm a gaucho. And yeah, that was really fun. And again, getting that fossil was just such a sweet, gift. I really appreciate it. And finally, did not train for the Jurassic 10K, but it's fine. It was super cool. It was, for people that don't know LA, Studio City, Burbank, wherever Universal Studios is, it's, there's not a lot of real estate. It's not like going to Disneyland where you have, you know, tons of space and you have these long runs. Cause I used to be a runner in high school. I did the LA Marathon twice and I've done half marathons and 10Ks and stuff. This was what made this really special, was that not only did you run through the park, but you ran through the back lot. So if you're like familiar with the studio tour, so you got to run through, you know, the Bates Motel set from Psycho, and you got to run through the airplane crash set from War of the Worlds, and got to run past the Spinosaurus from Jurassic Park 3. What? So I ran it with my dad, with Brenna White, aka Beeksels, aka Bonnie Puns, and Heather Mason, Nerd Heather. Also ran into Perry Nemiroff, who's been on the podcast and from Collider, and Emma Fife too. She's also at Collider now. She hasn't been on this podcast yet, but I don't know how big of a Jurassic Park fan she is. Maybe I should ask. but yeah, it was like at 5:30 a.m. and it was just like, we got to run through the gates to enter Universal Studios. And then at some point you run through the Jurassic Park gates. Like, you don't run in the Jurassic World ride, but you run through the like line. And so you get to run from under the gates, which is really cool. I would have personally preferred to run through the gates through the front instead of through the back. Cause it's, you know, getting to see the sign and run through, like, that would have been really cool. But still it was the earliest I've woken up in a long time. And yeah, I've never done any of those like Disney marathon, like the runs through Disneyland and stuff. And this was Universal starting to do them more, but I thought it was so fun. And again, they're playing like Jurassic music along the ride and stuff. And I'll probably insert a clip, you know, around here where, well, like one of my favorite moments as far as like that idea of like the Jurassic, being the Jurassic run in that sense. I mean, there was a part where you're like in a tunnel and you just hear like, you know, just like dinosaur sounds. But there was a moment that was really funny where you're running through this tunnel part. You run through Waterworld, and you're running through the ride. And then, you hear the music from Jurassic World, Michael Giacchino's score. And as you like come burst out through the tunnel through Jurassic parking, you know, you're like, ah, Burbank. And it's like, you almost expect to see like dinosaurs and it's like glorious and stuff. But what's funny is there was a bunch of forklifts. So they all look like a bunch of sauropods, but you know, they're like mechanical sauropods. I don't know. It was just, I don't know, it was just the funniest thing. But yeah, and very sore afterwards, but it was worth it. And we did the park with, my dad and his girlfriend Shannon, and I had to push Brenna in a wheelchair because her IT band was acting up, but it was a lot of fun. It was fun to go on the Jurassic World ride with my dad, because 20 years ago or whatever, my dad took my sister and I to Universal Studios. It was probably the first time I ever went to Universal Studios. No, because we went to Universal Studios in Florida, like when we were like 4 or 5 or whatever. But this was the first time I'd gone on the Jurassic Park ride. I've posted that picture on social before. But I got to go on the ride with my dad again, which was super fun. And my dad posted on his Instagram, and I'll post it on the See Jurassic Ride Instagram. But essentially,
his like scream as he goes down the ride looks the same exact as he did. Like our expressions are basically the same, but you know, the only thing that's changed, you know, when I went to that Jurassic World exhibition with my sister in Chicago a few years ago, we kind of recreated a childhood picture of us in front of the green screen from Jurassic Park, like back in the 90s. And it inadvertently, we had kind of, my dad and I had kind of recreated that moment a little bit when we went down the ride. Cause my dad's very like interactive with, rides, and he loved Harry Potter. He's a Slytherin. Loved all the like 3D rides and stuff like that. So it was really cool to get to go on the Jurassic World ride with him, you know, cause we went on the Jurassic Park ride originally over 20 years ago. So that was really nice. Whew. That was a lot of stuff this month, but it was so much fun. You know, I've been putting in those hours getting ready for the holidays, but you know, you can't forget to have fun. You can't forget to have fun. Okay. yeah, let's take a break and then I want to get to your questions. What are the scariest moments in the franchise? I just have a couple from social and some emails, some really great emails. Yeah, I'll see you in a second. All right, and we're back. I don't know why I did it that way. I also wanted to mention really quickly, too. I'm wearing headphones today. I think that's why I'm acting all weird. It's been over 2 years since the first time I went to Toronto and went to the Royal Ontario Museum with Stephanie Cook. Hello, Cookie on social. Very talented comic book writer and editor and all around just Renaissance person. And I had such a blast at Dino Fest. I really want to do more stuff like that. Dino Fest Natural History Museum of LA. I want to do more stuff like that. So we're starting an official campaign to do a Dino Fest at the Royal Ontario Museum. So, I posted about it on social in the last couple days. And yeah, it's just, I want to throw more events and stuff. Obviously, stay tuned for January, Los Angeles. And I want to do more Jurassic events. I really want to get the community out there. I really want to get us all hanging out and talking dinosaurs and talking Jurassic Park. Again, next year, lead up filming of Jurassic World 3, 2021 Jurassic World 3. So I feel like the next 2 years are going to be really big for Jurassic fans, and I don't want to waste a moment. I think I was just so inspired by how great June of 2018, the lead up to Fallen Kingdom, how much fun that was for Jurassic Park fans. And even Jurassic June this year was a blast. And yeah, I just want to keep the dream alive. So, yeah, check that out. And, you know, I guess tell your local Royal Ontario Museum employee. but yeah, let's get to the scariest moments in the franchise. I think the thing that we discovered, so go back and listen to the episode with Luce and Brenna and I, because I think the thing when you talk about Jurassic Park, because there's those elements of horror, but then there's horror as in like jump scare, horror as in like dread, tension, horror as in sort of the sort of immeasurable, you know, deep time perspective, this big creature from the past. There's kind of a mix, you know, there's different ways to measure that. So, you know, so that's why I'm excited to read everybody's, responses and stuff. So let's get to, God, these emails say Halloween. Okay. So let's start off with Facebook. And then we'll go into some emails and then we'll go into some other socials. So, as far as like scariest moments. So again, go back and listen to that episode if you haven't yet, but just the idea that there's different kinds of scary. And I think that's really important to remember when you think about Jurassic Park, which isn't, I don't know why I'm, mansplaining Jurassic Park to you guys. All right. And we're back with Brenna White, aka Beaksels, aka Bonnie Puns. You're right in the middle of the end of this podcast. But hey, look.
The middle of the end. I love that.
I'm always down for, I don't know if you're like, you're not a surprise guest because I knew you were coming, but.
But the listeners didn't know. Hey, listeners, surprise.
So what I'm doing right now is I'm reading, I like looked and I was like, it's November 21st. I'm reading people's scariest moments. But I said earlier in the podcast, Jurassic Park is all year round. Look, Jurassic Park sometimes is actually like a Thanksgiving movie for a lot of people.
Oh.
So, yes. Yeah,
but also the beautiful feast that Tim happens upon
Yeah, the Lex and Tim happen upon.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, sorry, and Lex too, but Tim really like goes for it with the two cake servers.
Well, and the 6-foot turkey and all that stuff. Anyway, so I was just telling them about when we did our episode with Luce. Again, happy birthday, Luce. What was scary was different for everybody. And, you know, there's like jump scares and like, ah, oh, this is so beautiful, but it's so scary scares, you know, dread, tension, all that stuff. Uh-huh. So I was just starting to read people's comments on Facebook in the Facebook group, See Jurassic Right Podcast. Just to read people's opinions about it. So I was going to read the first one. I'll read the first one from Grayson. Says, as far as what their scariest moments are for Jurassic Park or the Jurassic Park franchise, Grayson says, when I first saw the original in theaters, I used to hide my face every time a carnivore came on screen. Me too. Given I was 5 at the time, but I still saw it 3 times on the big screen. Did you want to read this one from... Well, yeah, again, I mean, that was my whole thing. That's my whole Jurassic origin story, which is like... It's scary, but it, you know, but I want to not see it. And I think that's kind of how Luna was too. It's like a little bit of scary, a little bit of fun and exciting. You
oh
know?
Gosh, like at the Harry Potter.
Oh yeah, that's what we were saying the other day at Universal Studios. They do like a dark arts light show thing. And I'm like, that's going to be her Jurassic origin story. I'm not looking at you. I have to talk into the mic like this. That's why I'm doing this weird sideways thing.
Oh, don't worry. Nobody can see that. And I'm totally fine with it. But also I wanted to say about the dark arts thing. Luna was like, no, don't go any closer. And like she kept hiding, but she also couldn't look away.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how. So I think that's a little bit how Grayson kind of saying here. And again, same thing for me. It's like it's scary, but also I went back 3 times. Did you want to read this one from Megan? And then you can read Zelma's responses too, which, I mean, again, Zelma's one of my favorite people, and I always love when she responds to stuff.
Megan says, the long grass scene. To this day, when I'm walking through any field of anything tall, that scene comes to mind, and I'm instantly ready to get the hell out of there. Zelma responded, I can't not say, don't run into the long grass anytime I'm near an overgrown field.
Oh my God, me too. Always, always.
Megan responded, I just got chills. I watch a lot of scary stuff, and there are not many scenes that have a lasting effect like this one does. Definitely one of those scenes that stays with you. Zelma responded, true. As a city kid, I'm already inclined to be very weary of cornfields and overgrown pastures.
True.
We don't have cornfields in the city.
No.
Then I'm skeptical. That scene just validated that trepidation.
That would be scary if you walked in an alley, you turn a corner, and there's just a cornfield there.
Yeah. I trust it.
I totally trust it.
Give me that corn.
So I'm going to read the next one, which is from Jennifer. Again, these are from the See Jurassic Right podcast Facebook group. She says, the T-Rex breaking into the sunroof and attacking the kids in the car. Yes. We caught the whole section at Dino Fest. Oh, that's cool. And at first, I thought it wasn't a good idea to let my kids see it. My younger son was so into it, he screamed to copy the kid's scream. That's great. I love it that the first time her kid saw it was at Dino Fest and just like part of the movie. I forget who said it, but I remember somebody commenting that like, yeah, they show their kids scenes of the movies in piecemeal. So it's like you almost kind of like you're like warming your kid up to the idea of watching something as opposed to like having to make them suffer through the whole thing at first. You kind of like test the waters a little bit, which I thought was an interesting concept.
Right.
But yeah, so that's I mean, look, that scene is we talked about it in the episode, but that idea that like that was like an accident that the glass like wasn't supposed to smash. And so I think that's what makes it all that's what makes it all the more scarier. Did you want to read this response from Zelma?
Sure, I'll be Zelma again.
Play the role of Zelma.
I'm Brenda. I'll be reading the role of Zelma. The raptor head in the lab in Jurassic Park 3 gets me every single time. Also, the T-Rex in the tent in The Lost World. I put my whole fist... Oh, no. I can't click see more.
Oh, hold on.
I put my whole fist in my mouth and silent screamed along with Kelly. Oh, boy. Oh, I know. What would you do if you were in a tent and there was...
Well, I mean, that was my thing when we recorded the episode. That was like one of my underrated moments from as far as like scary moments. I feel like that moment is so good. And I feel like it's not kind of brought up as much. I think the idea of these two people in a tent and then also seeing Ian's realization where he knows what's going to happen. So I think the kind of juxtaposition of that I thought was like really cool and really terrifying.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Here's the rest of Zelma's comments.
Okay. So going back to the Seymour, she has her she has her whole fist in her mouth and she's silent screaming with Kelly. Not related to the movies, but the scene in the first novel where the raptors stalk Alan and the kids through the labs always creeped me out. I used to read the novel in this one corner of my room. I forever came to identify that corner as a perfect hiding spot for a velociraptor.
Aww.
I know. To this day, I still think of it as Velociraptor Corner. And I even found journals from my childhood where I wrote about the Velociraptor Corner. Oh, that darn corner still creeps me the F out.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Like, that's so funny and sweet. I love that so much.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, I just took over you being like, no, I love that.
And then Bethany responded to the jump scare and... And agree with the tent scene. Yeah, the tent scene. The tent scene is underrated.
The tent scene.
Okay, so the next comment is from Susan. Susan says, the original gets the biggest scares from me. Every time the water in the glass starts trembling and you can hear the thud of the T-Rex footsteps, my stomach just drops. That first T-Rex attack always has my heart pounding. Also, the raptor in the kitchen scene is so intense and scary that there has to have been times where I just skipped watching it because it was too much. That's interesting. Have you ever stopped or like skipped over something because it was too scary? I'm more of a cover my eyes kind of
guy. I know. I cover my eyes. I cover my eyes and cover my ears as well. I was just thinking today, so part of this new job I'm doing, I was setting up a culinary trailer for a TV show.
Oh, I thought of the kitchen scene when I saw the photos.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to make a boomerang of me like hitting a ladle against the stainless steel because everything's so fresh. But I don't know why I didn't. But maybe I'll do that within the season of... the show I'm doing.
Season of the Wolf. Did you want to read Kristen's comment? I realized that was also cut off as well, too.
Okay, from Kristen. In Jurassic Park, when the water in the cup shakes and the goat leg falls on top of the Jeep right before the first appearance of the T-Rex, the raptors in the kitchen, in The Lost World, when the trailer is falling down the cliff, no matter how many times I've seen them, those moments are still so scary and suspenseful. In the Jurassic World movies, I think the creepiest moment is in Fallen Kingdom when Maisie is trying to hide in the basement and the Indoraptor runs its claws through her hair.
Yeah, that is really creepy.
It gave me chills the first time I saw it. Well, me too. I'm like, no, in the hair.
You're like, oh, I don't want to think about it right
claw
now.
Claw in the hair? No, thanks.
But also, it made me think too that like in Jurassic Park, sometimes scary moments aren't necessarily like with dinosaurs too. I mean, just the trailer stuff is really scary as well too.
Yeah.
You know, like when Sarah Harding is like on the glass and like, you know, as it's breaking and everything.
But it all becomes lighthearted with the McDonald's order.
And a double turnover. And a double turnover.
Literally a double turnover.
I mean, that's what happened to the trailer.
Yes.
Okay.
Have you talked about that before?
No, actually, this is the first time I've ever thought of that. Holy shit.
Yes.
Okay, the last one in the Facebook group is again from, or no, wait, Bethany. Oh, yeah. She just responded to Zelma, which is great. Bethany says her scariest moments, I have to say, in JP2, when the T-Rex strolls in the camp, pops her head in tent, and sniffs Sarah's jacket. It's a brilliant build of suspense. Oh, and most scenes with the Indoraptor. I love the design of her. That beautiful mansion, excuse me, very theatrical, gothic, and classic spookiness. Yeah, the Indoraptor's scary as shit.
Yeah. And the rain? Is it raining?
Yeah, it's raining. I feel like the Indoraptor... Like, the Indominus, you almost feel bad for her more, I think. If you think about it, the Indominus gets eaten by the Mosasaur, whereas the Indoraptor gets impaled by Blue. Like, I feel like Indoraptor was less sympathetic to me. I don't know.
It's a pretty brutal death.
Yeah, so, I don't know. That's a competition. Who's more sympathetic, the Indoraptor or the Indominus Rex?
Wait.
Because you see her bones, you know? She's playing cards with Zara inside the belly of the Mosasaur.
Oh, God.
They're playing cards.
Isn't that a nice thought?
Yeah. So, thank you, everyone, from Facebook. And then I just have three emails from the email. cjurassicwrite@gmail.com. Oh, yeah, because two of them are from Dusty, actually. No, not because there's one. She had a follow-up. So, here we go. Let's start with... Jeremiah, and then we'll finish off the emails with Dusty's email because it's really great. So Jeremiah says, hello, Jeremiah here, Belgian Jurassic on Instagram and Twitter. Wow, from Belgium. First off, I'm a new listener. I want to congratulate you on the podcast and interesting conversations with your awesome guest. It's a great escape from life to hear people talk about movies I cherish so much. So thank you. No, thank you. So now to answer your Halloween question. I'm like trying to retrofit it because it wasn't just Halloween. It was just scary Jurassic Park moments. But look, Halloween's forever, as I've said.
Halloween's forever.
I have a few scary scenes. The Lost World, when Sarah is on the trailer window and is slowly starting to crack. That scene was so intense. JP3, the beginning in the Avery when they realize it's a birdcage. Yeah, which I think is, again, that idea, like,
yes,
building tension.
Yeah.
The combination of the music, the fog, and the bridge that was rattling. And then the Pteranodon, yes, that came out. Awesome stuff.
Right.
Ooh, and I love this, which I didn't think to include. Battle at Big Rock, when the baby was still strapped to his chair in the trailer, and you see the Allosaurus trying to get that little guy. Having a toddler myself, it made me feel uncomfortable and, yes, scared.
Oh, no.
That was the first time I've had that combination of those feelings and gives me high hopes for Jurassic World 3. So there you have it. Keep up the good work and look forward to the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my top, what we did top five, right?
Yeah, top five.
The Pteranodon was my, in my top five as well. I also have a toddler.
Yeah, that's strapped into the, well, I remember, Hannah, at Jurassic World in all caps on Twitter, which is like, how did she get that handle? I'm still so curious.
She uses the I in World. In Jurassic, duh.
Oh, really?
So it's an L, I probably.
Oh my God, I had no idea.
That's like a classic, like, screen name trick.
Whoa, I didn't think about that. That is incredible.
To verify this.
Yeah. But she said that when she first saw Battle of Big Rock, she thought the baby was, like, impaled, which is, like, horrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Which is such a horrifying thought. Thank you, Jeremiah. I'm so glad to have your ears. And those are some great scary moments. So let's get on to Dusty's email because she wrote some great stuff.
Yeah.
And I like she's been keeping the...
Oh, I'm just doing the Jurassic with an LC.
Oh, you're right. Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yes.
We stan.
Tote stan. Love you, Hannah.
She says, hello, Steven. Hope you're having a spooky Halloween month. Let's get into the scariest moments of the Jurassic Park / Jurassic World franchise. In Jurassic Park, she says, the build up to the T-Rex paddock, followed by Rexy's attack on the Explorer. Thank the gods, Dr. Grant thought quickly enough to save the kids. The lead up to the kitchen scene and Lex's shaky jello will always haunt me, along with the raptors opening the door to the kitchen. They could open doors. That's a great point. I mean, just even the thought that they could open doors in the way that they present that in the movie is actually really scary. And I didn't really, I always think of the kitchen scene itself, but you're right. The lead up to it is actually as equally scary in a way.
And it's wild that they even had a doorknob on the kitchen door when usually it's all galley doors.
I mean,
which is something I've talked about just because I'm a chef, but
they spared no expense.
That's right.
We're going to have door handles. Did you want to read the Lost World one?
I find myself biting my fingernails every time the T-Rex attacks the trailer. If only it hadn't been parked near a cliff, would that scene be as intense? However, the scene that bothers me the most is the reveal that something has eaten the crew of the ship after it docks.
Ooh, we didn't talk about that. We didn't talk about San Diego at all. And the poor dog.
Oh, what ate them? Where did that creatures go? Why?
I like how I talked about the dog and you're like, the people, where did they get eaten? It's like, the dog, Rexy ate the dog. Or not Rexy, that's the bull T-Rex. In JP3 says, right off, the Spinosaurus is intense. It ripped into the plane like a big cookie. Yes. And it was trying to get to the gooey center, which in this case is people. The scene that made me jump was when Amanda Kirby sees the raptor in the jar at the engine facility. That is definitely still one of the biggest, like, jump scares in Jurassic Park, is when Amanda Kirby is staring at the head in the tank.
Oh, yes.
That still gets me every time. Eek, it's real. Also haunting, when the Pteranodon is sitting on the rock and slowly turns its head, we see it head on. It's the thing of nightmares, those eyes. I mean, that's such a classic trailer moment. And I think it's also, like, such a good, just like, oh. Do you want to read the Jurassic World one?
Jurassic World. When Owen and the others are in the Indominus enclosure, yes, and they realize it's still in there with them. I believe I was the most grossed out, however, when they found the tracking device. Oh, yes, totally. The tracking device she ripped out of her own flesh. Yeah. First of all, I'm just like, is she okay? Like, honestly, that's my first thought. It's like, oh, if I had ripped a chunk of my own skin where my tracking device was, I would not be okay.
I think those are points for Indominus being more sympathetic, as far as that goes.
And maybe she's just like a quick healer. That's part of her genetic makeup.
Her special ability. She's Wolverine.
Yeah.
She's Hugh Jackman. In Fallen Kingdom, the Baryonyx coming through the tunnel and just barely seeing it through the flashes of lava was so frightening. However, I couldn't help but laugh at Franklin screaming.
Aww.
I mean, that is true. I mean, I think that's so much about what I like about Franklin is like, we like to see how afraid he is. It's kind of like why I watch, there's a Let's Play guy, 8-Bit Ryan, where I love watching him play horror games because I like watching him get scared. And I feel like that's why I like Franklin. It's like fun to relate in how scary it is with somebody in that way. But yeah, the Indoraptor is so intense. The scenes that scared me the most were when it reached out of its cage and it barely touched Macy. Yeah, again, that's just like classic, like creep of like fingers through the hair kind of thing.
Oh, right.
And it opened the door, and when its creepy claw reaching for the blanket, like it was some big badass wolf. Oh, I didn't. It's a little bit of like Little Red Riding Hood in that sense.
Oh,
Macy has red hair. Does Little Red Riding Hood have red hair?
Does Macy have red hair?
Right. She has red hair.
She's like a strawberry blonde.
Yeah. She's not Claire red hair.
Right. Okay. Battle at Big Rock. I don't understand why they kept the window blinds open. I know that they were watching the dinosaurs and it wouldn't be the same if they had closed it. But still, why aren't you hiding? Then the baby cries and it triggered any maternal instincts. Save the baby. Right. I agree. Because of course, I'm just like, oh, baby. No. You're okay.
Well, yeah. Maybe they just... I mean, I feel like the window... I mean, you know, I think they're kind of hypnotized by the moment, too. I think that's the thing people forget about. I mean, it's such a horror trope, like, you're kind of too hypnotized to do anything. But I think that's true to life.
Well, I think that the blinds being drawn may have drawn attention to the dinosaurs as well, because it's like an action, it's like a movement.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like when I'm closing blinds, it's like, you know?
Yes.
And that would have set them off. Dusty says, hope you have a great Halloween, stay sexy, and save Rexy. Thanks, Dusty. Oh, and then she had... Then that was the other email, which says, oh, I forgot one more scary moment for Fallen Kingdom. The display scene when Claire, Owen, and Macy are in the dark display and the Indoraptor is hunting them. There's a moment where the lights come back on and Macy stares out the window to see if she can see anything. And all of a sudden, the Indoraptor is mirroring her face. It gives me chills every time. Thanks again for the podcast and bringing together everyone their love of Jurassic. What I actually think is like at night, sometimes when you're like in a house that has like fishbowl kind of windows and you can't see outside, I feel like that's really scary.
I hate that so much.
And that reminds me so much of that scene. And I actually think about Michelle McNamara's book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, when she talks about the type of homes that at the time the East Area rapist, D'Angelo, the Golden State Killer, like those homes in that area of like Northern California, like kind of Vallejo and like all that stuff. Like there was a lot of these like at the time, like modern homes that had these big kind of fishbowl windows. And so I actually think of like, so when I'm watching Fallen Kingdom and that scene, I think about that, to be honest.
I mean, that's part of why I'm so obsessed with like closing the blinds when I get home. And I'm like, if there's light inside and I can't see outside and people can see inside, I hate that so much.
Yes, me too. Oh, it's so creepy. Thank you for your email, Dusty, your emails. All right. On Instagram, at C Jurassic Ride on Instagram, Spectre Jess says, definitely when Lex falls through the ceiling tiles and the Velociraptor jumps to bite her and she barely gets pulled back before it does. And then that emoji of like, which, yeah, is very scary. At A Stinnett 7, when Tim sees the shadow of the Velociraptor in the kitchen scene. Again, classic.
Yes.
And in Lost World, the T-Rex in the tent and running through the Velociraptor field. Again, these are classic, scary Jurassic moments.
Oh, wait. I just want to interject with something I'm not sure if we talked about, which maybe someone on Instagram or Twitter will mention. But like when Tim is on the electric fence and like, you know, they're building that tension when Ellie Sattler is like flipping the switches.
Yeah.
I feel like we did not talk about this.
I think if anything, we talked about how the Laura Dern flipping the switches is like an early ASMR.
Yes. So it's like in that moment when you know that he's about to get electrocuted and you're just like, I'm also a child, because I was a kid when I was watching it. It's like, and still there's that tension because like, you know, Dr. Grant feels so much confidence and he's taking care of these kids. Sorry, this is like a whole thing I'm making.
No, it's very, that is actually very terrifying.
Sorry, that's all.
And then at Ren and Nitz, definitely the kitchen scene. Matt, the Allosaur, 1804, the big one reveal at the bunker when, I'm never good at remembering which raptor is the big one. But I think they mean when the raptor kills Muldoon, which is scary.
Oh, yes.
At Amber Anderson's is one we haven't mentioned before. The opening parasailing scene in Jurassic Park 3 when the boat goes into the mist. What ate them?
Oh, that's right. We have talked about it because we talked about how it was maybe the Spinosaur.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because people have said pteranodons, but the whole point of Jurassic Park 3 is that pteranodons get let out at there.
And it was a croc boy.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there was some pteranodons free because there's the one at the end of The Lost World. But those ones didn't have teeth. Rach Robbins responded saying, I'll never be able to go parasailing because of that scene. At Lindsay Kate says, the Dilophosaurus flaring his neck and spitting poison on Dennis. The idea that this thing that goes from like cute, we talked about that a little bit, that goes from
it was cute, one of my top five.
Yeah, that goes from cute to scary. At Kale Garden 24 says the kitchen scene with the raptors. Chris Abel's art, he's a great artist, says the raptor surprise. In the Mr. Hammond, I think we're back in business scene. JP when the T-Rex peers in the windows at Lex. I mean, that eye, I feel like that's a meme of like, you know, of like, oh, they just got a real dinosaur, you know, because the eye looks so real. In The Lost World, when the T-Rex pokes his head in Sarah Kelly's tent. Yeah. At Gabby Wallaby says, my mom calls JP a horror film to this day because of the scene in the kitchen, but nothing has scared me as much as the opening of The Lost World when the girl is attacked by the little dinosaurs,
yes,
and the compies. We don't see her injuries, just the mother screaming.
That was my number one.
Yeah. No, it's such a good choice. It was such that I didn't really think of. Gives me chills to this day. Ooh, at SKEA Han says, the glass of water shaking, so simple, so scary. And then also SKEA Han says, the bird cage scene also made me turn the third movie off plenty of times growing up. And then has an eagle emoji. And then just two more. At Nina Marie at 723 says, so this might count. My mom threw me a birthday party when I was in third grade. Bless her heart. I opted to take my class to see Jurassic Park 3. The scariest part of the 8-9-year-olds, the trailer for Nicole Kidman's movie, The Others.
Oh, God.
That's hilarious. That is actually like, that's a weird movie to put in front of. Because Jurassic Park 3 is still a movie that kids would like. You know, Jurassic Park has that mix of, you know, family friendly, kind of.
Sort of.
Where The Others is like pure horror.
Yes.
The Others is a fucking terrifying movie.
Okay, let's not watch it.
No.
Okay. No, let's watch it right after this.
Let's watch it right now. at Rache Robbins says, the kitchen scene is the scariest thing ever. The raptors tapping the claws while they're thinking about their next move. And I love the scene in Fallen Kingdom when the Indoraptor gets into Macy's bedroom. So many classic bits from horror movies. The shadows, the rain, the door handle slowly turning. They can open doors. Macy hiding under her covers in true little kid fashion, and again the claw tapping. I thought Jay Bionis said that he was inspired by like a 70s or early 80s version of Dracula, so I think that's a very that's a very apt comparison. So
on Twitter we have at Alan M. Ching. He posted a gif of Sarah Harding with the breaking glass, says scariest ASMR moment.
You're right. I know. Clink, clink.
Right. Oh, perfect. At Dinosaur Habitat said, the velociraptor lunging at Ellie in the maintenance shed. It terrified me when I first saw the film in a cinema as a 10-year-old. Even now, over 25 years later, having seen the film countless times and knowing it's coming, I remain impressed by how effective the attack is.
Oh, it's still so... I mean, again, when I saw for the 20th anniversary with Dax and many other people, but I was sitting next to Dax. I mean, he really did jump as tall as my head, like to my head height in his seat.
Oh, really? Wait, the adjoining photo is so funny.
Wait, what? Show me. Oh, yeah, that's like the promo photo. This is in a trading card on Twitter. It's I'll include it with the episode, but it's like, it's just an angle that was probably never clearly meant to be seen. Like, it's like a promo photo of the raptor that is in that scene attacking Ellie when, like, Ray Arnold's, like, arm falls on her. But it's, like, from this front angle, so it looks like a Muppet.
It's like, oh, no, he has his hand to the side, and it's like he's throwing two-piece signs and, like, smiling super huge.
Hey, kids! I'm a velociraptor!
But, you know, two-piece signs as a velociraptor could, which is, like, all the claws.
Yeah, it's great.
Genozoic artist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, he responded to Dinosaur Habitat and said, I agree, definitely the maintenance shed. Coming off the adrenaline rush of better hurry over the fence before Dr. Sattler electrocutes you. We're given a moment that feels like we can catch our breath to have us stolen by a lunging velociraptor. Perfection.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, it's like, it's kind of like a 1-2 punch kind of situation. A 1-2 claw kind of situation.
At J. Villabella, Jennifer, who also commented in the Facebook group, she posted a GIF of Lex in the car shining the flashlight directly into Rexy's face.
Oh, yeah, I would be pissed, too, if somebody shining a light in my dang face. Oh,
you know that I hate that, too. Sun coming through the blinds, yeah, even. No, true. Thanks. Only when I'm waking up. Loved Dogs and Hockey says, the raptors in the kitchen always gets me. Even now, when I know how it ends, I get so tense during that part. At Code Word Salt, when I saw it in the theater as a child, I definitely screamed a little when that goat was abruptly consumed.
Aww.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because we're all watching the goat and it's like our pal by the end because it's been in there for the long haul, just like you.
I know. I want to see Jurassic Park from the perspective of the goat.
And
doesn't end well.
Last but not least, at Our Dog Tucker said, I would probably say Tim and Lex in the kitchen with the two raptors. I'd say that's probably the most popular.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall is like...
Or the most, not, I wouldn't say most popular, but like the most memorable from Jurassic Park.
Well, and I think we talked a little bit in that episode too of like, and you've, I think you've always pointed out, it's like being there as a kid in that scene, like you relate, we think of the strategies, how would we get out of this?
Yes.
I think it's the most like pure relatable kind of thing.
Yes, it's so. Like, I'm like, it's like a dinosaur stainless steel labyrinth.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, that could be an escape room. That could be like a Legends of the Hidden Temple kind of situation. You know, it's like, it's kind of like a pure, it's a very like self-contained situation. I think that's why it works so perfectly.
Right.
Well, thanks for joining me, Brenna,
at the
very end of this minisode.
You're welcome.
Thanks everyone for sticking with it. I hope you enjoyed all the discussion this month. I mean, so much, I'm really looking. So, thanks everyone for answering your questions. It was so great to hear all your scary moments, and I just want to watch the movies again right now and get scared all over again, because Halloween is forever.
Halloween is forever.
So this goes into my next question, because again, we talked about all this great Jurassic news over the last month and a half, so much casting, expanding the cast from 6 to 13, which is wild that the cast jumped in size in the last 2 months. It doubled, basically.
Yes, but so satisfying. Like the lingering questions of like, are Franklin and Zia returning?
Well, they were confirmed. So
yes,
which is, I mean, so
like,
exciting.
Yeah, so it's just like nice for us.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that like it. We finally, that mystery that they are going to come back. It was nice to. It would have sucked to have to waited till like next year to find that out.
Yes, so it's nice that we got that satisfaction. And I know that you talked about this. I'm sure earlier, but when Laura Dern came out and made that announcement, with Colin Trevorrow, that was excellent.
So good. So that leads me to the question that I want to leave y'all with at the end of this episode, which is, what Jurassic news do you want to see most in 2020? So where they're starting to film at Pinewood in February, you know, we're probably going to get a trailer at the end of November next. So in 1 year from now is probably when we're going to get a trailer, because that's usually when they release them, or around the Super Bowl time in 2021. But we'll probably get one before then. I forget how that worked. Now my brain's all scrambled about when we got the trailer last time, like either October or like November the year before. So obviously that's like the big one at the end of next year. But I mean, title, more casting news, set photos, you know, maybe if the Jurassic World Live Tour is coming to your city, I don't know, like what kind of confirmation that other dinosaurs, like other than Blue and Rexy, are coming back, like what kind of news do you want to hear? Oh,
I'm
go sorry. Ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm so curious about the title now that you brought up the title.
I know. Jurassic Park 6, Jurassic World 3. It's just going to be that long title. But yeah, let me know what Jurassic news that you're looking forward to. I mean, yeah, again, I think especially in that this first 6 months of 2020, I think there's so many possibilities. So let me know, like comment in any of the socials, See Jurassic Great podcast group, call 323-688-6969 or email cjurassicright@gmail.com to leave, again, some longer comments as well. Thank you everyone for being here, and hold on to your butts because they've been thoroughly scared. So you gotta comfort them a little bit now.
Comfort your butts.
Happy 6 foot turkey day. Aww. And I will see you very soon. Thanks, Brenna.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Now you can also interact with me and the show by following me on Twitter at Stephen Ray Morris and following SJR Pod on Twitter, See Jurassic Right on Instagram, See Jurassic Right on Facebook, or you can send me an email at cjurassicright@gmail.com. Not only am I looking forward to talking to people about their Jurassic Park experiences and hearing yours, but I also am going to be sharing ephemera from my childhood and, oh God, I'm going to share the fan fiction on there as well, and pictures and toys and everything. It's going to be great. And I wanted to thank Caitlin Thompson and Tim Ruggery at Acast, Molly McAleer, Heather Mason, Stephanie Cook, Sarah Iyer, and you. See Jurassic Right is an Acast podcast. Check out the show on their mobile app. And thank you for listening. Until next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.